T-minus 57. White House, Washington, D.C. Fresh from a security briefing and several calls with fellow national leaders in the aftermath of William Godfrey's big announcement at the UN, President Slater took a few moments of relative privacy with a handful of her most trusted aides. None had her ear in anything like the way Jack Neal once had, with his treachery and eventual descent into bitter madness having no small part to do with her reluctance to let anyone else so close or lean too much on any individual advisor. "What do you have for me?" she asked one, relatively friendly in her tone given the relative esteem she held him in. These days in Slater's world, everything was relative. "I've been told that one of the ground agents in Birchwood has sought to put something on record," the aide said. "Nothing that we need to act upon, but something he wanted to mention, presumably to cover himself should anything come of it."
"Come of what?" Slater asked, leaning forward in a keen interest that was so far born more of curiosity than concern.
In his words, and I'm quoting, he wanted to note his major concerns about Clark McCarthy's state of mind.
Curiouser and curiouser, Slater thought.
"Oh?" The aide nodded. "Apparently Clark spoke to the agent in a highly and plausibly threatening manner before leaving for the airport."
At this, Slater sat back and rolled her eyes. "I only want to hear about things that matter," she sighed. "Christ, have they never spoken to him before? Look at him. Threatening is his default state. Jesus, you know how much I'm dealing with, and you waste my time with that? Does anyone have anything else?"
The aides glanced at phones and sheets of paper, each running the usual mental calculations that came with trying to decide whether a piece of news was worth mentioning when Slater was in this kind of mood. Her threshold had become increasingly difficult to determine in recent months, with a day of, "Thanks for telling me, I always want to know," often followed by one of, "Why the hell are you bothering me with this?" The same aide who had just spoken, having already been on the receiving end of Slater's stink eye, decided there was more to be gained from climbing in her estimations with a favor-salvaging comment than there was to be lost from the position of mild disdain he was already languishing in.
"Go," Slater said, sensing his hesitation.
"Well, these old Greater X3000 devices we were briefed about, the ones that are expected to soar in price and lead to potential scarcity-driven disorder when word gets out that they might block the messenger's telepathy?"
Slater's eyebrows almost dared the aide to continue.
"I know we all think it's nothing," he said, "but naturally, we have people monitoring the marketplaces where gray area items like this change hands. The only reason I mention it is that a certain Phil Norris from a certain Birchwood, Colorado, just paid a significant sum of money for 10 of them tonight."
Slater considered the aide's face for several seconds, driving him crazy in anticipation of which side of the gratitude-disdain line she was going to come down on.
"And?"
she eventually said, settling that particular question with a single word.
"Well, the aide stammered, "I suppose the possible relevance would be based on the idea that Norris might know something we don't, given his proximity to McCarthy and given his closeness to, well, them. Why else would he buy 10 of these things?"
"You just said it yourself. They're going to explode in value and desirability. If we know that, an ear-to-the-ground huckster like Norris knows it too. You can all go now. I've heard more than enough." As the aides got up to leave, Slater shook her head at her desk and momentarily longed for the days of having a Jack Neal to lean on. Not the Jack Neal, but someone else who had something about them, some insight, drive, instinct.
"Telepathy blocking headsets," she lamented. "Of all of the bullshit in all of the worlds."